Hello and welcome to Worlds Apart. 2.5 millennia ago, the paragon of Chinese sages, Confucius, famously noted that the way out is through the door, but for some reason, no one seems to be inclined to use that method. This saying appears very timely today when, instead of trying to reduce global tensions following a rupture with Russia, the West is picking up yet another fight, this time with China. Is the door to some sort of a peaceful understanding and mutual benefit among great powers still open? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined from Beijing by Henry Wang, the founder of the Center for China and Globalization. Dr. Wang, it's great to see you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Now, over the last 6 months, we've been following the war that Russia and the West are fighting in and over Ukraine. But now it seems that one open conflict with a nuclear power would not suffice for Washington and its allies, because over the last couple of weeks, there has been a barrage of very provocative statements and visits coming from various political corners in the West, coupled with increased naval activity, coupled with an intention, and I think now a decision, to send more weapons to Taiwan. Do you think that's a real threat, or is it just a rhetorical posturing on the eve of some crucial political decisions in the UK, in the United States, and in China too?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you for that question. Yeah, I think that the world is getting to a much dangerous period now, because since the Second World War, we have been experiencing 77 years of peace, and somehow, you know, now we are have a more very intense geopolitical conflict, and we have now the globalization has in some capacity give away to the regionalism and to the geopolitical priorities on some major powers. So that's really very unfortunate. Particularly, we are seeing the world is really. The global governance system, actually, since the Second World War, is somehow jeopardized. And for example, we really should really resume to the UN. We should really get P5 countries to talk, and we should really abide by the multilateral system. So there's a lot of regionalism. We see, particularly, there's more secure alliance. I mean, rather than economic alliance. For example, in the last 77 years, we see WTO, we see all those economic, OECD, all those economic framework is working, quite strongly in the past. But now that has been gone. We see now NATO, we see now AUKUS, Five Eyes, we see that all those Quad and all those military security alliances are really booming up. That's really a concern.
I mentioned Confucius in the beginning. He was not just a philosopher. He was also a politician. And I think that's not a coincidence, because if you take it upon yourself to steer whole societies one way or another, you have to combine politics and philosophy. Now, let me ask you, this increasing belligerence that we are seeing from the West, do you see that as a tactical matter, as some sort of short-term political benefit, or is that actually a strategy on the part of the West?
We need to actually really go back to the fundamentals and the philosophical thinking, like Chinese, Confucius, thinking over 2,000 years ago is really peace is the most important thing in his thinking, actually. So I think now we are one of the challenges we're facing is we have a different ideology, we have a different value civilization, probably in some kind of clashes now. That's really worries. We used to think economic globalization would really unify everybody, minimize all the differences. But on the contrary, we see those regionalism, those different ideology and values are really clashing now. So how can we really overcome that? I think we still need to come back to the wisdom of our ancestors, how we can find a way to exist peacefully. That is really a challenge, you know, how we accept the different values, how we can make all the differences and then accept, minimize the difference, you know, expanding the common space. That's really the challenge we're having now.
Well, Dr. Wang, I think, you know, respecting the wisdom of the ancestors was also one of the Confucius teachings. It was the core of his understanding. He's also known as one of the earliest advocates of the so-called golden rule: don't do unto others what you don't want to be done unto yourself. And I think one of the problems in the world today is that the Americans simply don't recognize neither Russia's nor Chinese right and legitimacy of our worldview. They don't recognize that, you know, we as countries have that our vision, have our history, have our understanding of what is good and bad in the world. And I wonder if any of those good measures that you proposed, you know, improved global governance, negotiations, you know, mutual benefit, etc., is it possible without the West recognizing us as moral equals? And do you think it's possible that they would ever recognize either Russia or China as their moral equals?
Well, I think, you know, we have established a post-Second World War system. And that system is under great jeopardized now. And
it's being jeopardized by the very architects of that system. I mean, it's the Western countries that are destroying that system, right?
Yeah, that's correct. There's a lot of, the system is not functional. I mean, we see that happening. So what do we see basically? Yeah, that's true. In the last, several decades, we see the war in Afghanistan, in Syria, in Libya.
There was also Iraq before that.
Yeah, that's right. So we really have to think of how we can overcome that. Well, of course, way before that, we also see what happened in Vietnam, in Korea, and things like that. So the war now, we are having a much more prosperous world. We have a much more material enriched world, but still we still haven't found a solution to avoid conflict. So that's very sad. I think, yeah, let's go back to the golden rule of Confucius, you know, don't do to others if you don't want others to do to you. So that's really true. I really think that we should all abide by that and really self-reflecting and find a way to coming out of this crisis.
Dr. Wang, you said it's very sad, but I think it's also very cynical. The fact that, you know, all the conflicts that you mentioned, Western countries played a major role in them. They actually initiated all those conflicts, and all of a sudden they are so taken aback by what they describe as hostility, both on the part of Russia and on the part of China. They accuse China of aggressive moves as well. How do you explain that? Do you think they are cognizant of the fact that they have caused so much harm to the world and that they are not saints in the regard in the realm of warfare by any measure? Or do you think they honestly believe that they are the carriers of the goodness, the only carriers of the goodness in this world?
Yeah, you're right. I think that, it's unfortunate that we have this great gap of misunderstanding, I think. And also mistrust. This, you know, giving all the reason, background, you know, ideological differences, value difference, different political system, and of course, you know, given almost 3 years of the pandemic, isolation, all added up. But on the other hand, I think, you know, from Chinese point of view, I think, you know, we probably need to also make more clear of what has been achieved in China. You know, like we lived 800 million people out of poverty. We have actually build the best infrastructure system in the world, answering to your people. China has actually had 1.3 billion people under some kind of Medicare and 1.1 billion have under some kind of social security benefits. So all those are great achievement. Well, has not been really understood. I mean, well, before the outside world.
Now, let me ask you specifically about the issue of Taiwan, because when it comes to that very perilous question, both the Chinese and the Americans are now accusing each other of trying to change, if not the letter, then the spirit of their previous agreements. And those agreements, let's admit, were very vague, very ambiguous in nature. I wonder if you would agree with me that ambiguity has served both Beijing and Washington for quite some time, but now it has turned from being a safeguard into being a major fuse to a potential conflict. Isn't that agreement in itself, the Shanghai communique, a major problem for both countries right now, something that could be abused in order to start the war?
Yeah, that's very dangerous now. I think that the cornerstone and, of course, the fundamentals of China and the U.S. established diplomatic ties in 1979. The Shanghai communique basically spell out very clearly that the U.S. recognize, there's one China, and that the U.S. will only maintain commercial, cultural, and non-official ties with Taiwan. So what I mean by non-official ties? So that's the principle, that's the prerequisite for established diplomatic relation. And that's the China's precondition for established diplomatic relation with 181 countries. So now U.S. have Nancy Pelosi, I mean, the third highest ranking official, lined up to succeed the president if there's anything goes wrong, really made a big official visit to Taiwan. So that's really a big violation. So I think that's really a very dangerous move. I mean, China has to respond. China has to do military operations, upon this kind of respond to this kind of crisis. But I think, really we should refrain from doing that. I mean, we're still seeing congressmen and people with official capacity still, parade through Taiwan. So that's very dangerous. And those are military, also coups and Navy ships, also passing through Taiwan Strait all the time. So we don't see Chinese navies passing through Caribbean or go to Hawaii, and things like that. So it's really, I think China was under a lot of, this kind of provocation to really challenge China. So how can China stay calm? I really think that we need to go back to the basic, the fundamental trust and the principle that we have used to establish diplomatic ties.
But I guess your will alone is not enough to go to that fundamental trust. I remember reading in Henry Kissinger's memoirs, and he was one of the architects of the Shanghai memoir, that that at the time it was negotiated, both sides wanted to overcome the Taiwan issue as an obstacle to their very promising and burgeoning new relationships. So what was important was not what was in the agreement, the ambiguity of it or the precise wording of it, but actual political will. Do you think there is a political will on the American side to actually come to terms with China? Are they actually going to allow you the mutuality of benefits? Because from their recent moves, they seem to be able, they seem to be willing to endure harm to themselves in order to do harm to others, including China.
Yeah, this Taiwan issue has really getting very, very dangerous now. I think that we really have to be very careful and very cautious. Because the world hasn't seen any big conflict, particularly in this region for seven decades now, and I really think that Taiwan is part of China historically and has been recognized by the both sides. I mean, 1902 consensus is basically China has signed with KMT that the CPC and the KMT agreed that there is only one China. And both sides recognize there's one China. So I think that we can do the peaceful negotiations through the integration, through all the tourism, exchanges, trade. Eventually we'll get together. But now with foreign pressure, with foreign influence, it's going to be very, very risky. And I think U.S. maybe want to use China as a card, as an unsinkable aircraft carrier in this part of the world, which I think they should abandon that kind of thinking. Let's get peacefully, solution to the crisis of Taiwan.
Okay, well, Dr. Wang, we have to take a very short break right now, but we will be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Henry Wang, the founder of the Center for China and Globalization. Dr. Wang, before the break, we were focusing on the American belligerents. And let's admit, the world is more or less used to American diplomatic rudeness. But both the European Union and the United Kingdom, up until recently, were officially in favor of strengthening their ties, economic ties, with China, but that seems to be changing too, because Liz Truss, for example, the current foreign minister of the United Kingdom and likely new prime minister, said the other day that she would classify or rather codify China as a threat if she comes to power. If that indeed happens, what do you think that would mean both for London and Beijing in practical terms, not in terms of political rhetoric, but in terms of trade and jobs and, people's lives?
Well, I think this is going to affect enormously the livelihood of the people around the world, particularly to the developed countries. For example, China's trade with Western countries, including EU and UK, China is the largest trading partner for EU. And so if the political relation gets really deteriorated, that is going to affect economic relations. You know, we already have, energy crisis, food crisis, and all those things going on. We had high inflation. So China is a backbone of the global economy. But for example, last year, China's import exports gone up 30% in supplying the world. So we would not really would let that happen. If those political foe has been really getting into the system and making the environment very dangerously for the world. So I think we have to go back to the basics. We have to really let the common sense prevail, rather than we are really pleased the nationalism, populism, just for the sake of getting elected. We have to really lead and by good sense. So that's very important. That's a test of the politicians in the contemporary world.
Can I ask you specifically about Europe? Because I think all those qualities you just mentioned are in great demand in Western Europe right now, because it is now left without access to the affordable Russian energy sources, which I think you would agree with me, for many decades served as an almost invisible and therefore underappreciated basis for many European industries. And the question I have on my mind is, do you think the Europeans can practically afford to cut ties with China in the same sudden manner they tried to cut ties, economic ties with Russia? Can they actually do it given the scale of economic calamity that is facing them right now?
No, I don't think they can. Actually, unfortunately, we are living a very much intertwined world now. I think the case with Russia probably is a good example of that, because they want to economically really isolate Russia. But I see that Russia is still doing okay, and then basically also those days, if you really practice economic sanctions, you sanction yourself too. So that's really a reality that people get to realize. As the winter is coming, we're going to see a very harsh winter, very harsh time ahead. We're going to have seen the energy prices skyrocketing, and we see the food prices gone up. So there's many countries getting affected. On top of that, we cannot afford to lose China economically convenience. Made in China supplied the world now for the last several decades. People get used to it and before realizing. So I think they are trying to decouple, but I think this is really against the competitive advantage, against all the economic theory, and it's really make no sense. I think it's important that the countries work together, that everybody interdependent on each other. That is really a good system, rather than we are decoupled, isolated, and we may clash in the end, and we may destroy the world.
Dr. Wang, can I challenge you on that a little bit? Because I know China has enjoyed many benefits of globalization, and it tries to hold on as much as it can to the existing system. But I think it's pretty clear that many countries around the world are seeing interdependence not as a source of security, but rather as a source of major vulnerability. And not only in the aftermath of the conflict in Ukraine, but also because of the pandemic, when many international actors were behaving extremely selfishly. So there is now a clear move on the part of many industrial nations to make sure that they produce the basics at their own home, that they don't have to rely on crucial goods on anyone else. Do you think globalization, the way we knew it, is really sustainable in this day and age?
Well, I think the globalization certainly had a big setback. I mean, particularly with this ideological and Cold War in some kind of practice. And decoupling is happening in certain sectors. But I think, you know, they can try. They can experiment that. And I think the business community, the companies, and the consumers will eventually rebel on that. And then they will not accept that. So I think when they go to the ballot office next time, ballot box next time, they're going to vote a politician, you know, with their favoring globalization probably, because if they are, you know, they don't have all the supplies, if they don't have all the goods, and then if all rely on locally to produce that, you're going to drive up the cost, they're going to lose productivity, lose efficiency, it will make them life miserable. So I think the world is already quite independent now. We cannot really go back to the old days.
But Dr. Brank, you said that it may have many detrimental consequences, but in case of Western Europe, those consequences have already manifested itself. And what's very puzzling to me, I know that, for example, China is very proud of lifting hundreds of millions of people out of poverty, but it seems that many leaders in the West are committed to the reverse. They are ready to, you know, subject their populations to sharp decreases in living standards as an acceptable cost for their foreign policy. And I wonder how long do you think people in Western countries will be able to take that? And do you actually see any political forces that can argue for, you know, some sort of a different policy that would actually, you know, marry, not decouple, but marry economy and politics back together?
Well, I think this day probably will come. I mean, for example, in the last 4 decades, the middle class of U.S. Has not really gone up. And also that 1% of Wall Street is almost equal to 40% or 50% of a mass population wealth in the United States. So how can that sustain? I mean, politicians can always say China is to be blamed and it can be a scapegoat for that. But you can't say wolf is coming, and then use that old tactic to really fool your voters. I think in the end, the voters will realize that it's their government not competent enough. They do not have a competent domestic policy. They cannot solve their own problem well. Then they can only probably rely on the foreign scapegoat. So I think all the countries should avoid that. We should not stir up the nationalism, populism in every countries, including China. So I think we have to, you know, come to the sense in the end someday. I mean, I think the harsh economic situation will make people think twice and go back to basics.
A year ago, none of us would have believed that there would be a war raging in Europe. And look what we have right now. And we are also seeing the disruption in economic and industrial ties, which survived the most acute periods of the Cold War, and now they are being severed. I know you don't have a crystal ball, but I also know that the Chinese have a certain predilection for sort of a longer view of history. Where do you think we will see this continent, Europe or Eurasia, a year or two from now?
Well, I think that we may have this currency to drag on, and it's going to impact the economy and also the livelihood of the people in those continents. Until people fed up. You mean like a Vietnam War? I mean, it used to be all people thought is the right thing to do, but in the end, people really felt that it's not necessary. So I think that we really have to go back to the peaceful solution. I have wrote an op-ed in the New York Times, I mean, as you recommend, like permanent 5-member countries at the UN, plus EU, plus Ukraine. We should have 7-party talks. And then we should have really getting all the solutions through the United Nations. And then we see Secretary Guterres is visiting Russia and Ukraine. So we need some international peace efforts. And then also, helping mediate the Europe should really mediate the tension between China and the U.S. So let's all work together. I mean, we have to get let those peace efforts prevail. before we fail on that.
I'm hearing a lot of discussion here in Moscow that the concept of Eurasia needs to be redefined, that, you know, a couple of years ago, we couldn't have imagined Eurasia, you know, this vast landmass, interconnected, prosperous, you know, achieving good economic and social results. We couldn't imagine it without Western Europe. And I wonder if you think that is possible now. Do you think Russia and China and all their neighbors in betwixt and between can do it without Western Europe while it is being absolved in its anti-Russian, anti-Chinese sentiment?
Yeah, I think that's possible. Depends how they play with it. Because if they really, I think if the West really corner China and corner Russia and really really hostile to this part of the world, you know, it probably bring them more together. You know, that's quite possible. But I think on the other hand, you know, we are so much intertwined. We are so much interdependent. And let's not really, you know, the whole world, the whole planet is actually very small. We should really all united. And then we still have Asia, we have Africa, we have Latin America. Let's all work together. You know, 85% of the population not living in the developed world. We really need to really get all the countries together. We are in the same boat, rather than 193 boats, we are living in a big ocean ship, and we have to take care of each other.
Well, but Dr. Wang, you understand that many of the current predicaments in the global system are because of a number of countries which insist that only them have the right of steering that ship one way, and one way that would only benefit them. So let me come back to the question that I asked you before, I want to get a clear answer now. Do you think the West would ever authentically commit to the mutuality of benefits rather than the mutuality of harm or damage which we are observing at the moment? Do you think they can leave with some kind of an agreement that would benefit others as much as it would benefit them?
Well, I think we'll see, you know, but because I think they have a system. I mean, they waged the many war, and then eventually they have a withdrawal from that. They realize it was a mistake they have made. So for example, the America is now supplying all the weaponry to Ukraine and saying fight until last Ukraine. I don't think that was the right way to do it. So I think we really need to come to the peaceful talks, and we should really have a peaceful solution that we really still got the hope for, rather than we totally confront each other and destroy the world. I still have a bit of hope that we can still talk and we can still make a peace out of this.
Well, as Confucius said, the way out is through the door. Somebody needs to use it. Anyway, Dr. Wang, we have to leave it there. I greatly appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart. We'll be right back.